When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist, this cartoonist. Interesting conversation on Twitter the other day. There's almost always an interesting conversation going on Twitter when I can actually pay attention to it. Haven't been dipping into the social media as much as I would have liked to lately. The penalty one pays for having a lot of irons in the fire and working on some things that are very satisfying. You find yourself losing contact with all your friends. But I'm not going to go into that. What I want to go into is a conversation that was started that I just barely stayed on top of. I think it was instigated by a friend of the show, Casey Van Heis of wintersandlavelle.com. Something about, I think it began with her making some kind of observation about how strange it was that Transformers had gender, and led to her asking me, where do new Transformers come from? Where do Transformer babies come from? Or, as she put it, how is Transformer Babby formed? For those of you who grew up with the internet, there's a little internet joke. So I told her where Transformers babies come from. For those who are curious, a short summary statement is the latest canon maintains that all Transformers start as what are called protoforms, which is some kind of like blank robot, and they have a couple different size variations. And once they scan their local surroundings for a suitable alternate mode, they come to life in their fully born as a fully grown thing, like Athena. And but there's other iterations. If you really want to dig into the mythos, just go to Wikipedia, right? But the question came up again, well, why is there gender if that's the way they're made? I mean, Transformers don't have to actually copulate. I mean, one of the reasons we have gender is so that we can reproduce, right? So to which I said, well, you know, I like to think of Transformers as essentially being genderless, but having a disposition towards masculine and feminine. And that's a way to look at it. And that seemed to satisfy her, I think. Casey, correct me if I'm wrong, if that answer was satisfactory. But I also followed up with the fact that, well, you know, this kind of fact-checking on fiction, in my opinion, is kind of, you know, it's fun and everything, but it really is not the point of the story. I mean, the fact of the matter is it's about giant robots going on adventures, and a lot of the stories represent kind of I don't want to say pro-social, but stories that are good for children through the make-believe world of giant outer space robots. It's one of the reasons I really don't care to ever see the Michael Bay movies. I just don't understand how making them realistic makes any sense. And that's kind of what this is all about, right? I mean, it's like we can easily bewilder ourselves or get ourselves or talk ourselves out of enjoying something by trying to map a realistic logic on top of it. How can a Volkswagen Beetle turn into a slightly larger than human-sized robot? It makes no sense. And still be a functional car. Where do all the different car parts go? Where do the robot parts go? It's replete with problems of logic. And that's where this episode is kind of like a part two to episode 116. It doesn't hold up. Is that part of this comes out of, I think, that there's different ways to appreciate story, and I like to always try to approach it in the spirit that it was intended as best as I can figure it out, right? It's a kid's show. You know, don't ask too many logic questions. That'd be like asking a child to explain when they create their character laser legs, why does he have lasers for legs? The kid's just going to say, he just does, that's all. This is where Mark would insert the Apple Jacks commercial thing. But it kind of reminds me of the rookie mistake of world building. You know, everybody talks about this thing that a lot of beginning creators, cartoonists, writers, etc., a mistake that a lot of them make at the outset of starting a story is they spend too much time taking notes on the story. They spend too much time developing the architecture, the plant life, the political backstory of all these different peoples, all the different clothing designs for all the different characters. I did this with one story. I've told this before. I was going to reinvent my mini comic series, The Black Hole Equation, as an 8-volume graphic novel series. And I filled sketchbooks with all sorts of notes on the worlds and the different solar systems and the different vehicles that would be there and all the different clothing and all the different plant life and architecture. And I spent so much time on that that I didn't spend any time actually thinking about what the story's about. What was the idea I was trying to communicate? I was building a world, all right, but I didn't have a story. A story needs a world, but you can have a world without a story, right? You can look at the planet Earth, and there's a ton of stuff on Earth. There's a lot of different things, a lot of different lands, a lot of different peoples, a lot of different cultures. But unless you can find a story, you know, there's lots of people who live on Earth who know a lot about Earth but can't tell you a story. Do you see what I'm getting at here? And I think that this is sort of related to this idea of asking too many logical questions about our stories. Now, a story has to have a logic. Your story has to have an internal logic so that it feels consistent. It feels like a world you can get lost in. Take any Pixar film, which are all ridiculous. Toy Story is about talking toys. Up is about a guy who puts balloons on his house and flies around. The Incredibles is about a family of superheroes. Superheroes are absurd. But within each of those stories, there is an internal logic. Is everything explained? How does Elastigirl in The Incredibles make her bones so pliable to be able to do all that stuff? How can she make herself into the shape of a parachute? How does that work? How does reproduction work with a character like Mr. Incredible who's that strong, right? That's a question that constantly comes up, is how could Superman and Lois Lane ever, you know, consummate their marriage because he's so powerful? Things start to break down when you do that. Stories start to seem absurd because, get this, stories, for the most part, a lot of fiction stories aren't meant to be interpreted that way. They're meant to be interpreted like poetry. I'm going to quote Joseph Campbell again. It's been a while since I've done it. Maybe. I don't know. I don't go back and listen to these. I may have mentioned him last episode for all I know. But he talks about, and I borrowed a lot of these ideas from him in a talk I did on why superheroes communicate, a talk I did at the Ann Arbor District Library a while back. And he says, if you speak in poetry to somebody, you say, you're a rose, you're a flower, and they turn to you and say, make up your mind, they're missing the point of the poetry, right? They're interpreting it literally. This is something that if you find yourself getting hung up on these questions, it's something that you'll have to learn to relinquish or let go or try not to focus on so much when you're watching stories, because what's really important is, what is the story about? What's the idea that's being communicated? Not necessarily is what they are doing logical or realistic or plausible. Well, plausible is a different thing, right? Now, let's just say real quick, before anybody misunderstands me, I'm not talking about a story being anything goes, just slapping old ideas together, although you can do that. You know, some writers work in an absurdist kind of slapdash method of just throwing a bunch of random ideas together, see what happens, and find something in there, or the audience will find something in there. But for the most part, it's tough to get away with that. It's tough to have things have like a dreamlike quality unless that's the point. Like dreamlike quality meaning like I'm walking along a street and I'm just a kid going to school and all of a sudden I find a magic bicycle and I can fly on it and then I shoot laser beams out of my eyes, I land on the ground, suddenly I'm a rock star. You know, if it's a nonsensical sequence of events, then, you know, there's nothing tying it together. The story logic should tie it together. The logic of the world that your characters live in and the logic of the ideas that you're trying to convey through those characters. And asking yourself, how are Transformers babies formed? That's an interesting nugget of information for people who are invested in the franchise, like me, where I get really, you know, I like to actually have nerdy conversations about what is the nature of the Matrix. And I've told this before, you know, what's the nature of the Matrix? Is it the repository of all the fallen leaders' souls? Is it the final fragment of the God who created the Transformers homeworld? Is it an aspect of Vector Sigma, the supercomputer that created all Transformers life according to a different iteration of the Transformers series? That's fun to think about, and that's fun in the sense of a game. It's like the same way I play video games, same way I play things like chess. You know, it's not that serious. It's just a fun kind of thinking exercise, thinking strategy. It's not something I want to get into a fight with somebody about. And ultimately, I know I'm dealing with a pretend world. Let's go back to an early Thunder Punch Daily where I described the act of writing as the same kind of thinking that you do when you're a little kid playing on the playground and pretending. When you say, I am a super spy and my code name is Iguana and you are my trusty sidekick, the monkey with the rubber leash. We're going to run around the playground. you know, it's just pretending after all, and the ideas are just pretend, and we shouldn't, while we take our work seriously, you know, I think we can easily get a little sidetracked in asking too many realistic logic questions of our stories. Now, if anybody were to counter me and say, yes, but how will anybody get the aboutness or the big idea of your story unless the story is well constructed and has a good internal logic? That's true. But that internal logic doesn't have to be absolutely apparent, right? So like it is my contention that unless you're telling a story that specifically deals with life and death in a Transformers universe, like for instance, there are some episodes of Transformers animated where they deal with a character's mentor dying and then he tries to resuscitate him by putting his spark inside of a blank protoform. And there's like very serious implications for what that action results in. But unless the story calls for that, it's not necessary information. Here's a case in point to try to back up this thing. Because like the internal structure, the internal logic that you construct for your story will come through. The big idea will come through, providing that you are good at writing. And then anybody who wants to counter you with, how do the physics of tires work in your world? That's kind of a sideline issue, not really important to the overall idea of the story. And here's my story to illustrate this idea. So a friend of mine, former student, came over to my house the other day, and she was about to tell me an anecdote about how she got in trouble for bringing up the topic of religion in mixed company. But before she went any further with her question, or with her story rather, she asked me this question. She said, Jersey, what's your religion? I want to make sure I don't offend you. And I stopped and said, well, that's an interesting question to ask me all of a sudden. And I'm curious, what do you think my religion is based on what you know about me? And she gave me an assessment that was pretty close to the mark and, 99% of the way there. And it's pretty cool because I never have brought the subject up around the young lady before. And it was kind of nice to see that, okay, well, I guess I behave pretty consistently because she was able to deduce from what she saw, what my religion was. Now, did she need to? Here's where that notion of what my religious stance is a sideline issue. That's a fact. That's how I feel about something. But the big idea of who I am comes through in my personality, in the narrative of my life, and the way I act. See, this is an analogy for story here. It's not important that anybody knows what my religion is, although if anybody were to ask me, I'll be glad to tell them if they're really interested. But it's not important. You can make a pretty good guess at that. Just like if you were to take a story where there's robots with gender, that is a fact that is inconsequential to the overall narrative of a story about men and women, not robots, men and women, personality-wise, who are struggling to achieve something or to destroy something, struggling with their relationships with one another. It's all just poetry, after all. At least that's the way I like to think about story. Not every story is poetry, right? I mean, some stories are autobiographical. But even then, when you're dealing with images and words combined together on the page, there's a certain kind of music and poetry to the combination of those elements, and we can't be overly analytical about how it all works as long as it is consistent in the context of the covers of that book, if that makes any sense. So that's my thought for today, is that if we catch ourselves, well, yeah, here's one more example to back this up. The same person who asked me about the religion thing, they brought up the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic show. And she was saying how she was trying to watch it. She gave it her best shot, but she couldn't get over some certain things. Like, for instance, the fact that there are chairs in the ponies' houses. The ponies have hairbrushes, and they use their hooves to pick objects up, like people objects, like bullhorns and things like that. They put on sunglasses with their hooves. How is this possible? How could they live in a world that's clearly geared towards people, but it's ponies doing it? Well, that misses the point. The ponies aren't ponies. The ponies are vehicles for us to play in this world. They are personas for us to try on, for young people to try on, to explore all the options that are facing them as they get older and grow into adulthood. So it's not important to ask the question, how could a pony sit in a chair? Even though there are episodes where ponies do, you know, the important thing is that the world is a place where you get to play through the guise of these ponies. And that's how I like to think of a lot, at least stories for young people. But you know what? I think a lot of stories are like that. It's you getting to experience a world or a worldview or a narrative that you wouldn't normally experience. That's why people like to get lost in fiction, or even why people like to read, I suspect, people like to read some biographies and autobiographies. You want to experience what that time was like, right? So, and at the very least, I think the real cautionary tale there is it could allow us permit us the indulgence of thinking too much about world building and not enough about story building. That's the important thing to think about. And so why do I like My Little Pony? Because it has a brilliant story vehicle to it, story engine, I guess, where there's a situation that's been constructed, this world that is delightful to experience and pretend to be in, and to experience the interpretations of that world through these different personalities of these characters that you are invited to subscribe to. Oh, I like Pinkie Pie. Oh, I like Rarity. Oh, I like Rainbow Dash. She represents how I feel, what my worldview looks like, that kind of thing. So yeah, you know, plausibility is important, but realism is ultimately not that important. Again, depending on the kind of story, but most of the time it's a lower priority in the list of things. What's the idea? What's it about? Is it plausible? Does it have its own internal logic? And then you can start worrying about, you know, literal physics, right? And logical connections between ideas, from an external standpoint. Hope this one made sense. So who am I? Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We couldn't do it without you. I just posted some stuff in the forum. We just recorded Art and Story episode 192, which will go up on Wednesday. And in it, I think it was Mark suggested that we start putting together some Art and Story ringtones out of some files that we have. And I did. I put together 6 different ringtones. I posted them in the forum for you guys to download if you really want my voice notifying you that there's a phone call. But we did put the Art and Story theme song on there as a ringtone, which might be kind of cool because I do like that theme song after all. So I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
I hope you enjoyed today's adventure. You know, television is not the only way to be entertained by an exciting story. There is another way. It's called reading. And one of the wonderful things about books is that they allow you to choose whatever kind of adventure you like. A trip with an astronaut, an adventure with the great detective Sherlock Holmes, a comedy, anything. You can find it in a book at your school or neighborhood library. Why, I'll bet there are even some good books right in your own home, just waiting to be read.